I think so many people, entrepreneurs particularly, define themselves by their business. And then when they lose their business, they don't know who they are anymore. So I think it's important to stay grounded and to make sure that you're delegating, you're creating more leaders. You want to hire people who are smarter than you. You know, I always say, if I'm the smartest person in the room, I got to find a new room.
You're listening to the Mother of Reinvention Show, a weekly podcast about midlife motherhood, careers, health, relationships, and more. I'm Megan Francis, a 40-something mom of 5 kids ages teen to young adult. Listen each Thursday as I bring you an interview with an inspiring mother of reinvention, plus some of my thoughts about wellness, self-care, relationships and divorce, big kid parenting, and more. It's all at motherofreinventionshow.com. Keep listening for another episode of the Mother of Reinvention Show. It's what's next for midlife moms. I've known today's guest, Julie Cole, for almost as long as I've been in the content creation world. Julie and I connected way back in my early blogging days when I was running a site for moms with lots of kids. At the time, I had 4 kids, ages 7 and under, and Mabel's Labels, the company Julie had started with 3 other women, was just a few years old. Mabel's Labels sent me packages of cute identification labels for my boys, Jacob, Isaac, William, and Owen, in the hopes that I'd love them and write about them. And I did. We put those labels on the insides of their hoodies, on their backpacks, on their favorite toys, and on each boy's favorite cup so they'd stop fighting over them. And those labels were indestructible. Those labels outlasted most of the things that they were stuck to. In fact, when I was moving, I found an old plastic cup missing the lid with Isaac's name still firmly adhered to the side. Mabel's Labels was the sort of indie brand that gets moms excited, and they grew a strong and loyal cult following while operating out of Julie's sister's basement. Like moms can be, the group was resourceful and patient. Julie actually told me that when they got too big for her sister's basement, they advised her to buy a bigger house with a bigger basement, and her sister did. Over the years, it's been really fun to stay connected with Julie and watch as her business and family grew. She now has 6 kids, about the same age range as my 5. But then about 5 years ago, things got really real at Mabel's Labels. It was acquired by Avery. Yes, the same Avery that makes labels for your printer. Years later, Julie is still with the company, only in a very different capacity. She's pivoted and reinvented her life and her work many times along the way. And today, she and I are talking about the Mabel's Labels success story. Spoiler alert, it was not an overnight success. We talk about what it was like in those early days, what her role is like now, and her advice for entrepreneurs, whether they aspire to sell their business or not, or just aren't sure. We also talk about what it's like to be a mom to a large family as those kids get older, and Julie's new book, Like a Mother, which released just a couple weeks ago. Keep listening for a great conversation with founder, mom of 6, and author, Julie Cole. Hi, Julie. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, so great to be here.
I love talking with you because you have such a fascinating backstory, which we'll get into in a second with your career trajectory. But you and I both have large families with very similar age range spans, but you squeezed like an extra baby in with like 2 years less time. So your youngest is 13, your oldest is 22. My youngest is 13, my oldest is 24, but you have a 6th kid in there. So tell us about that lineup.
Yeah, so a lot of fun, right? I mean, it's, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like it's getting a lot easier. So yes, baby is 13, and then I've got 15, I've got 16, I've got 19, 21, and 22.
Okay.
So packed them in tight. I like it that way.
I was going to say, that first three, that's like bam, bam, bam. And now they're kind of all not quite like launched yet, but getting close. What's that like in your family right now?
Right. So there are 3 who are away at school and 3 who are at home. But right now I'm kind of in that space where they've all come home, dumped all their junk here, and then they're waiting to get their new places. So I'm in that 2 weeks of just junk in my house and laundry and ridiculousness. I think you probably know how that feels.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, you're not really a... it's like a flop house situation because you're not really home anymore. Exactly. You're like the comfy landing pad, right?
Yeah, totally. Exactly. That's exactly how it is. But it is funny. Like you say, with those first 3, they did go off to uni, to college, like 3 years in a row. And it was really funny because the little guys did not love that. When Mac went off and then the following year, Posey went off and the following year, Spencer went. By the time Spencer was moving out, they were just all in tears saying, "We hate September. Every September, somebody leaves." It was really cute and sad.
Oh, that is, I think that's one of the sweetest things about a big family. And my two oldest kind of went off in different directions right after Christmas of this year, in a way that feels a little more final than their previous, you know, launches out into the world. And I got together with my 22-year-old and the three youngest siblings out in California for over spring break. And the little ones were just like, they just didn't want to leave him. But we had to take him back to the airport. And he's just, everyone was just so sad. And saying goodbye to him was really sad. And
it is. You know what? It's funny. It's a bit like that. And I actually found really like through the pandemic, it was kind of cute because I had at the time when it started and we went into lockdown, I had two kids away at school and they got sent home because, of course, we went into lockdown and then all the kids were off school. And I kind of felt like it was our time to shine. Like all we had six of them home. They were playing Dungeons and Dragons together. They're in the pool. Well, a lot of people, you know, I had a lot of friends who have onlys and they're like, my kid is not going to see another kid for I don't know how long. And for us, it was like, wow, this all finally paid off.
Yeah. Party time, right?
Totally. It was a nonstop party and they were socialized all the time.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I want to talk I want to talk about your Mabel's Label story, because I think that moms who are listening who've been moms for a while probably are familiar with the product, at least. I know I was joking I did an Instagram live the other day where I was saying I still have an old sippy cup that no longer is used as a sippy cup. It's like a sippy with the lid removed, with a Mabel's Label that says Isaac on it. And Isaac is 22. So that tells you how long those things last and how long that's been part of our family's life. Yeah. But tell us about that company and just the trajectory of your role within the company from its inception through where it is today.
Right. So the company's been around. We actually started, I can't believe it, but it's been 19 years. We just had our 19th anniversary. So yeah, probably your Isaac was like one of our OG customers, right? And look, we started for a couple of reasons. First of all, my son at the time, same as Isaac, was 3 years old. And my guy had just received a diagnosis for autism. And I'm a recovery lawyer. So I felt like when Matt got his diagnosis, he already had two younger siblings as well, keep in mind. I didn't think the traditional workforce was going to suit me any longer, and had this good business idea. I'd been talking about it with a couple of girlfriends. And so when Matt got diagnosed, we were like, okay, let's do this thing. So, you know, the why behind starting the company was a desire, you know, a family change, like needing to be here for my family and needing a job that was a little more flexible than the traditional workforce. And then the second thing was obviously filling a gap in the marketplace.
Yeah. Well, and there was a big gap because really we were OG because I think you were really forming a lot of community with mom bloggers at the time. And so I kind of remember that's how I was introduced to the company, but there wasn't really a great product, a great like personalization product that was long lasting and high quality.
No, there wasn't. Right. And I think that's why, like for us as moms starting it, like we really understood our customer. We understood our market because we were our market. We were tired of using masking tape and permanent marker. We wanted a product that was super durable, very personalized, and, you know, it needed to be dishwasher, microwave safe. We were tired of losing stuff. We were tired of our kids going to daycare or a play group or even having friends over. And it was like, whose sippy cup is this? And so, and it's funny what you say about the mom bloggers, because, you know, when we started, there was no social media. That was 19 years ago. But within a few years, then we started, you know, the bloggers started coming out, Facebook started, all this happened. And we jumped on social media so early because we knew it would be another vehicle for word of mouth for our company. And we know that moms talk about products we love, like it's our full-time job. So we were probably like the original company that reached out to bloggers and said, hey, we'd love to do a giveaway, because we know that moms trust other moms. They don't necessarily trust traditional advertising. You know, we don't want to. Nobody buys a triple stroller because they see an ad. They're like, let's see what Julie pushed around for 10 years. You know, like we trust. That's why influencer marketing is so huge. But we knew that. And that was where we did well. Like that's like hopping onto that early on and connecting with communities. And also it's a heck of a lot of fun. Like I just came back from my 13th mom 2.0 2.0 conference, you know, wow. Like we love connecting. We love our community and we've, you know, and we also provide great content to our, we have a good, you know, we have over 200,000 Facebook fans, 100,000 Insta followers. So community is a big part of what we do.
Yeah. I love the story of how Mabel's Labels, I believe it was like you and three other moms in a basement at some point, something like that. And tell us that story from how it went from there to being acquired and how your role has changed.
Right. Okay. So like I said, we started 19 years ago and it was basically I started with my sister, Cynthia, and two of our friends from university, Julie Ellis and Trisha Mombi. And we started, you know, we did a lot of research because at first we thought, oh, it'll be fine, easy to find something that can go through a dishwasher or microwave. Not so true. So we did a lot of research and testing, and then we started our business in my sister's basement. And our first marketing endeavor was writing letters to everyone we knew, asking them to go to our website. And you got to keep in mind, in those early days, people were still hesitant to put their Visa cards into a computer machine. And, you know, like there was a lot of hesitancy around that, right? So, you know, we were an e-commerce business, you know, in those days where there was still a little bit of skepticism around it. So there we were in the basement. And it was, I mean, those were rough times. Like, I remember I was pregnant with my fourth and I would make labels till 2 a.m. and then come home and get up with the kids at 6 a.m. and do the full day. And just, you know, like that. You remember that. You must think back to yourself too and be like, how the heck did I do it? How? But you know, you just barrel through.
And how, and it's so funny that you were escaping an even harder family life situation by making that switch. I mean, it's kind of funny that that's what you jumped into.
I know.
You opted for that.
I know. Yeah. I know. And that's why I do laugh when people romanticize entrepreneurship. I'm like, dude, I was in a basement making labels for years, you know, pregnant. And like, that's, you know, everything's, oh, I'm going to be doing TED Talks. I'm going to make $1 billion. It's like, yeah, that's going to take a while if you're one of the, you know, like it's, yeah. I think we need to remind ourselves what it's really like. So there we go. So we were in the basement and then we outgrew the basement. We ended up having to do a couple of hires and we thought, wow, is it even legal to have people in this basement? So at that time, you know, we weren't ready to put our money. We were a little nervous. We didn't want to get a commercial space just yet. So we advised my sister to buy a bigger house with a bigger basement. So she did.
I love it.
And off, I know. So off she went to that basement. We all went to that basement and we thought we'd be there 5 years. After 2 years, we were busting at the seams. Like we had to get out of there. So then we got our current facility, which is now a 14,000 square foot facility. It homes our 40 full-time employees. In summer, that swells to about 70 or 80. And that's where we make our labels. It's our production facility. It's where marketing, IT, finance, customer service, we all live there. It's our Mabel's Labels HQ. And and we're just, you know, going forth and, you know, world domination's a full-time job in the label biz.
I love it.
But as far as I go, so yes, we were acquired about 5 years ago. And that's also an interesting story because we weren't actually looking to sell at that time, but we were at a point where we'd been doing it 14 years and we were kind of all working as co-CEOs and kind of, we thought maybe we just need one person running this and maybe it's time to get some outside, you know, eyeballs on the business. So we knew we needed to do something, but we weren't sure what it was. So then, you know, the phone rings and it's Avery. And Avery calls and says, you know, we'd love to take you for dinner and have a chat. And we're like, hey, why not? So that was in July and the conversation went well. And by the end of December, we had signed a deal and we got acquired by Avery.
Wow. Let's talk about that point where you had, you know, four CEOs trying to run a business, which it turns out probably doesn't work that well. How did you navigate that conversation with four people who started a business together with all good intentions, like everybody's wanting to do the right thing for everybody else? How do you decide like who's going to run this? Or are any of us the person to run this? Like, how does that conversation go?
Look, it's a great question because it can be awkward, right? Like there are a lot of great things about having four of us at the table. We had a lot of, you know, different skill sets, different brains. We can support each other. If one of us was feeling like, oh, we're never going to make it, the other three would be like, yeah, we are. Like, you know, so it was never like lonely. But working as co-CEOs, I found that sort of near the end, everybody was a little bit defensive about what like their departments, you know, like it was, there was, we talked a lot about, oh, we're siloing again. So, you know, whoever was in charge of like production would be bickering with the person in charge of marketing, because, you know, so a lot of that was happening. And that's why I think we thought, you know, we can't work as a four-headed horse anymore. We need one person. And I kind of, I remember feeling like maybe the four of us has taken it as far, like we've done so well, you know, but it's not like any of us have a business degree. We have good instincts and great skills and whatever, but we thought if we want to go next level, maybe that's when we need to bring in somebody. So lots of just, you know, throwing ideas out there. And so it is, it was just ironic, really, the timing of Avery. And making the decision wasn't so hard. We all eventually got on board with the sale because for a few reasons, they weren't going to take us over. They loved the Mabel's Labels brand. They love what we created. So we were going to be staying in our same facility. We were, you know, our employees were all going to be there. It was not going to be a big shift culturally. What was kind of nice is that, you know, we would have the support and resources of a big company, right? Which is, it's like, great, we can use their legal now. We don't have to hire every time we want. Oh, we can use their HR policies. So in a lot of ways, it made things easier for us. So that was one reason, was that they cherished our brand and wanted to keep it. The other reason, and this was the biggie, was that the price was right. You know, we weren't about to give this company away that we had worked so hard for. So, you know, you've got to look at what your EBITDA is. You got to look at what, you know, and preparing for the sale of a business can be a big job. Like you go through due diligence and you can lose a lot of due diligence. So anybody out there with a business who's thinking about selling, you know, make sure you've got all your ducks in a row. They're going to want to see every contract. They're going to want to see every line item. They want to see, that's where, you know, no stone goes unturned, and that's where they can start taking money off the table. So our housekeeping was in great order, so that did not impact our sale price. So when we got to those two things, we're like, okay, I think we can do this. And you know, a couple of us were ready to move on and do other things. My sister and my sister-in-law both left pretty soon after. I stayed on. Part of the deal was that I'd stay on for a year. Because, you know, you want to make sure the transition goes smoothly. And then also my other partner stayed on as general manager, and she left maybe 2 years ago. So I'm kind of the last man standing 5 years later, but you know, I still love it. Still love it. I'm still passionate about the company. I love, like, it feels so fresh. I love the leadership of the company. You know, we've had some really great changes. It's an awesome culture, and it's a pleasant place to be. So that's why I stick around.
Well, and it sounds like you were really able to then hone in on what you loved about the business the most. You're still doing storytelling, really, for the business, and that's where you shine, right?
Exactly. And that was the thing that was also amazing that Avery understood, was that, you know, for us being connected to our customers and having a face behind the brand and is so very important, because that's what differentiates you. A personal brand differentiates you from competitors. It makes you stand out, and moms demand it. Mm-hmm. Our customer doesn't want to buy from nameless, faceless brands. They want to buy from people just like them. And it's a heck of a lot of fun.
It sounds like it also took quite a lot of self-awareness and humility on the parts of everyone who started to be able to say, hey, partnering with this bigger company or being acquired by this bigger company takes away some limits for us. So we need to get on board with the fact that we can't do everything ourselves, and we don't have to, because we now have these resources.
For sure. And it is hard, because I do find, like, often with entrepreneurs or business owners, the best thing they can ever do, and this is often hard, is leave that ego at the door. Because really, at the end of the day, you want your business to succeed. I want to be able to get hit by a bus tomorrow and Mabel's Labels to flourish. You know, you don't want to be, and I think so many people, entrepreneurs particularly, define themselves by their business. And then when they lose their business, they don't know who they are anymore. So I think it's important to stay grounded and to make sure that you're, you're delegating, you're creating more leaders. So you don't want to bring people into your business who are just going to follow you. You want to hire people who are smarter than you. You know, I always say, if I'm the smartest person in the room, I got to find a new room. And I want to hire people who are better than me and fill gaps and that sort of thing. So I think, yeah, the best thing that anyone can really ever do if they want the best for their business is to check that ego.
Yeah. Another business question I have for you, because I think this is something that in this day and age, with all the talk you hear about building, you know, your business to sell it or getting funding, like I feel like those conversations are just everywhere in a way that maybe you didn't like the average mom starting a business in her basement maybe didn't hear those questions or those conversations, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah. So did you?
Yeah,
do you feel like you?
It's so true.
Do you feel like you, when you started, you maybe had like blinders on in a good way that you didn't even know that was possible, so you weren't thinking of that yet? Or were you always thinking like, we are building this business to sell it eventually?
That's a great question. And okay, so first of all, when we started, it's not like we went and got funding or investors. And I mean, at that time, particularly, I think women, you know, kind of that mom entrepreneur set, like we were kind of the OGs of that. And, you know, we generally, you know, guys might walk into a bank and say, I want this. We're like, let's search our pockets for buttons and pocket
lint
and go after. Yeah. And bootstrapping and looking for love money, like asking parents to pitch in or, you know, siblings or friends or whatever, and just looking for support that way, but not really being ballsy enough to go and like invest, you know, because what if it doesn't work out? So we're, you know, although we had an appetite for risk when it comes to finances, like we all had young families and we were just like, we really can't afford to mess this up. Right. So I think, yeah, the whole funding thing has changed. That narrative is changing. You see so many amazing, incredible women now, you know, themselves investing in women companies. And like, I think about the Pink CEO, Sydney, who actually just did an awesome testimonial for my book. She, you know, so many women supporting women in the investment space. And I love that so much. I do think, and I, to your point, like, I don't think we did this, but do as I say, not as I do. I think you do need to, when you're running your company, you do need to think about, are you building it to sell or are you building it as a legacy business to pass along? Because you're actually going to manage it a little differently based on the answer to that question, right? So I think you do need to know and you do need to plan because, you know, if you are planning to sell your business, you want to get some personal things in line. You got to talk to your accountant, make sure you set up some trust funds, that you get a holding company because you want to protect some of that influx of money that you're going to get, right? You want to make sure you're doing the right thing with that. And also you want to prepare your staff and train your staff. And telling the staff we sold was a really hard thing to do. Because of course they just were like, how does this impact us? Like, right. Are we going to lose our jobs? You have them for like 30 seconds where, you know, we scripted it. We had a coach come and tell us how to deliver the message so that people would not freak out. Right. So there's a lot to consider for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you're right that the conversation is so different now, that scrappy, you know, we just know there are more options, but that doesn't mean we always know how to access them. And so I think it's really good advice to be thinking about that ahead of time.
And I do think, though, the access to information now is better. I mean, there are so many, like, look at just like online groups and like entrepreneur Facebook groups, or like there are so many people you can follow now. Like, remember when we started, there was none of that.
Okay, Julie, we are going to take a quick break. And when we get back, I want to talk a little bit more about the difference now between, you know, being that mom, like early in the trenches with that business, getting up so early and pregnant and all that, and kind of what that life looks like now. And then I want to talk about your book. So we will be right back. Hi, friends. I love sharing my favorite products. So if you want to see some of the things I'm using now, head to my More Faves page. It's at morefaves.com. That's M-O-R. Faves with an E.com. And if you ever want to make a suggestion of one of your favorite things, I love hearing recommendations too. Just email me at hello@motherofreinventionshow.com. Check out my faves at morefaves.com. Okay, back to the interview. Okay, Julie. So before we go on to talking about your book, I would really love to just hear, because I know that so many moms listening to this are either in that stage where their kids are getting older or like they're almost there. And I would just love to hear, what does a day, a work day look for you like now? Like your work life as opposed to when you say had like a toddler and a newborn and like preschoolers and a house full of elementary school aged kids.
Yeah. Those days, honestly, it is like, I have to admit, I've loved every stage. I did see myself as a baby person, but I'm loving having teenagers. But yeah, it was busy. Like when I had my fifth kid, my oldest kid was six. Mm. And I had like six C-sections. So I always had like a bit of a recovery to have to do and, you know, between building the business. And I did eventually get help, but this is like something I was very late to the game. I got a nanny when my fifth kid was one. And I often joke that I was three kids too late on that. But I think what happens is that, you know, in my mind, I'm like, well, I left the traditional workforce to be with my kids and start a business. So why would I get help? But it's really backwards thinking and I don't advise it. Like, get the help, you know, you got to get the help. You can't do all the things. I remember my sleep. I would sleep 5 hours a night. It would be 3 hours, get up and feed a baby, then 2 hours. And that was it. Like year upon year, I had kids in diapers for over 12 years, either one, two or three of them. So strangely enough, I really did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, I have a pretty good perspective. But now I just, oh my gosh, it's so easy. Like I just think about how, you know, I don't have to put people to bed. I don't have to get up in the night. I don't have to like, I can be like, everybody does their own laundry. Like get yourself some lunch, like whatever. Nobody's drinking bleach under the sink if I'm not paying attention.
Like, you hope. I mean, if they are at this point, there's something else going on.
They might be drinking something else at this age, but Yeah. And you know, it's funny because a lot of people say bigger kids, bigger problems, but that has not been my experience. Like certainly, you know, we have stuff. I mean, obviously I have a kid with autism, but he's away at university and he's still got executive functioning stuff, but he's awesome and he does really well. You know, I've got a few queer kids who are awesome. I've got another neurodiverse kid. I've got a little kid with OCD. You have all of them, but they're all amazing. And they're all like, they're really, really nice and fun kids. And they're so, the thing I love about this age is they're so interesting. Like we can just sit around and talk about politics and they're all very like woke. So they want to talk about social justice issues all the time. And like, we do really cool things together. And they're not like eye roller, door slammers, hang out in the room kind of kids. And I don't know if it's a big family thing, but they don't like, I've got so many friends who are like, how do you get your kids out of their rooms? I'm like, well, my rooms are so full of beds. Like, what would they do
in
there?
There's no desks.
There's no,
yeah.
Like, honestly, they sleep and they're so used to like being in a community that, you know, when they do homework, it's all like around a big table together. And so it's, yeah, it's been a lot of fun, but I do find, and this is just way easier.
Yeah.
For me, I find it like, I don't know what your experience is, if it's the same, but I'm just like, this is easy street.
There's definitely been, things that come up. Like you said, there's always things, that's life. And I think that what's different, It's like they're more emotional things. And if you have the capacity to deal with those things as they come up, then it's not as hard as like a kid like hanging off your nipple. Physically it just isn't.
Right.
I also think it's just like anything else. There's like expectations. And if your expectation that is everything is going to go exactly like smoothly all the time, and no one's ever going to have their own opinions of their own lives or like, you know, some challenge to work through, then you're probably going to run into a lot of problems with the teenage years because it turns out they are their own people. But if you can kind of take that in stride and let them be their own people, then they're really cool people and it's fun to get to know them. So I love it.
Totally. And again, I don't know if it's a big family thing, but I just like, I have expectations of them, but it's not that they become doctors or become like famous hockey players. They're not projects.
Right.
Like they're just humans that are going to grow up and probably, you know, get a job and maybe have a partner or a kid or two. Like that's all. Like it's just life.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I have expectations around behavior and about attitude and about effort and those sorts of things, but outcomes other than just being good humans, like I feel like that was my job from the start. And part of me feels like I had to be doing that job when they were little for them to get to where they are now. I can't suddenly say when they're 16, okay, now I got to start making them good humans. This is like a full-time job. And this whole gig is role modeling. Parenting, you can talk till you're blue in the face, but You know, if you're a complainer, they're going to be complainers. Yeah. You know, if you have a great attitude and you're like, okay, you know what? Let's problem solve this. Then they're going to be problem solvers. And I also let them problem solve. I don't swoop in. I don't rescue them. If I have a kid forget their lunch, then, you know, I don't bring it to them. I'm like, dude, that sucks. See if you can bum an apple off somebody. But it's just, and it's not punishment. It's a natural consequence. That's what happens. Like, I mean, I'm sure you've had this experience too. I can't be running around. I've got a lot of things to do. If you forget your gym clothes, you sit on the bench for the day. Like, sorry, that's just, you forget your project, you get docked 5%. Yeah. I'm not running around after y'all, and they only ever forget their lunch once.
Yeah. Well, and it's not, like you said, it's not punishment. It's just reality. It's like, sorry, it's got something going on. I can't help you out. I wish it worked out differently. I guess next time you'll, but you don't have to get mad about it. You just let it be what it is.
I'm not mad. And they know, like,
it's because it's a relationship. What you said, they're not a project, they're not a product. It's a relationship. So, you know, like if you aren't thinking I'm trying to churn out this result, then it really opens up.
Yeah.
It really opens you up. Yeah.
And plus it allows you to enjoy all the things, like, you know, like I have some kids with really untraditional interests. Like I have a kid who's madly into bird watching and it's so much fun. And my dad was a birder. So it's so fascinating, you know, dropping them off to do bird banding, you know, and then watching the migration patterns and keeping a bird list of every bird that's been in our backyard, you know, and it's like, well, my kid's not going to be a famous birder. Whereas sometimes people, like when their kids are like doing competitive dance or whatever, they're like, they're going to be in the National Ballet or they're going to be like, and they spend so much time doing these things. At the end of the day, they're not. They're just going to go off to college like everybody else,
right?
And then
start life. Yep.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, like it's really like, it's, I don't know. I guess I just don't take it all that seriously because it's, you know, it's just live and it's super fun if you enjoy all the little things it has to offer.
Well, if there were ever going to be a celebrity bird watcher, I think we are living in the time when that would happen. And maybe the irony is it'll be your kid, but that's not what you're going
for. Oh my gosh, you're right. There's probably going to be some sort of reality show, like competitive bird watching or something.
I could totally see it.
There, I do have goals for my child after all.
I love it. Well, Julie, I spent a lot of time kind of making fun of myself and my new, I'm 44, almost 45, and I'm not sure, I think you're a few years older than me, but we're kind of in the same.
Yeah, I just turned 51.
Okay, I thought you were right about there. And I've now kind of started to make fun of myself for some of the pursuits that I've gotten into that are very cliched, like, oh, you know, yoga and like gardening, and I just got chickens. I'm curious if you have anything like that you've found yourself gravitating toward that you just couldn't do when your kids were little.
Right. Wow. It is so funny because people often, when my kids were little, and you have this experience too, they'd be like, you know, what do you do for me time? And I'm like, me time? Like, wow.
Sleep maybe?
If you want me time, don't have six kids and start a business.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's not, but I always looked at me time differently anyway. I don't want to get my nails done. I'd rather, you know, be able to go to my kid's violin lesson and watch without having to chase a toddler around or something like that.
Right.
Right. So, so I don't think I've picked up any kind of weird pandemic-y, hobbies. I haven't started knitting or anything like that, but it is funny. My pandemic side hustle was writing my book.
Oh, well, yeah, because that is definitely more than a side hustle. It's a hustle for sure.
Yeah. Cause it's, you know what, it's been on the to-do list for a while for me. And, I found, like, with the pandemic, I wasn't traveling, cause usually I travel a lot, speaking at conferences and attending events and whatever. And I was like, I'm suddenly stuck home. And I'm like, I've got all this time. I'm not traveling. If not now, when?
Yeah.
So that was a buckle down time. I'm like, it's bookie time.
Well, and I love that you birthed a book with this name. So your book is Like a Mother, Birthing Businesses, Babies, and a Life Beyond Labels, which is a great subtitle. Not all subtitles are that amazing. So kudos to you on that.
Yeah, it's pretty good because it pulls in the Mabel's labels, right?
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it.
So the book, as of the day that we are, like the day we're recording, which isn't the day people will be hearing this in their ears, but the book is out. So tell us about the book, where people can find it, what it's about, what kind of wisdom they will glean from it.
Awesome. Well, you know what? I tell the story of Mabel's labels. But I fill it with, you know, it's humorous, but it's got some good takeaways, some good productivity hacks, some life hacks, parenting hacks, business advice. So it's just jam-packed full of that and my experience raising a child with autism and all the fun that goes along with that. And it can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indigo, Kohl's, all the places. You can just go online and grab it there. And it's actually been kind of funny because, you know, I've been a blogger for like 15, whatever years, probably more. So I do love writing, but I'm used to writing in sort of like, you know, articles or blog posts. Yeah. So to write like a thing that's like, you know, 200 and some odd pages,
it's a whole different thing.
I thought I would really enjoy it's a whole different thing. I thought I would really, really enjoy the process, but it was really daunting. Like I felt like it kind of hung over me for the year. Cause it took me about a year start to finish. It kind of hung over me the way, you know, when you're at college and, you know, you have that big essay due or that big term paper, but it's not due for like a month. So you're like, oh, it'll be okay to go to the pub with my friends or it'll be okay to go to play basketball with my buddies. But the whole time you're there doing other things, you're thinking I should be doing that term paper.
Yeah.
I spent a year doing that. Like every time I was doing something else, it was kind of niggling in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. So I do have that sense of relief that you only get when you write that last exam of the term. Yeah. That is my only comparison, because to me, that was the ultimate relief when you wrote that last term paper or that last exam, and then you were free till the next term with nothing hanging over you. And this is it's very relatable. It's the first time I've had that feeling since I graduated from law school.
Well, it's so permanent. Like a book is such a thing with your name on it and it's in print. And it's like, it's a very different thing than writing blog posts and articles which can feel kind of like, well, if this one's not my best work, it'll go away.
I know, there's that too. There's sort of a permanence with it. And like, it's gone to edit so many times, but you're like, what if, and you know, a little thing would bug me. Right. Yeah. So yeah, here we go. Well, it's all out there now, folks.
It's out there now. And we will link that up in the show notes for sure. For sure. Well, one more question for you, Julie. You mentioned that you know, you're really happy with where you are in the business right now. And I think you'll probably be there. You know, I could just see you being that face of the business for quite some time. But is there anything else? You're 51 now. Is there anything else that you are kind of working toward for this decade or the next decade? Where do you see yourself heading?
You know, it's funny. I'm not really look too far ahead. I'll have goals like, you know, the book or, you know, certain speaking engagements or conferences, or I might want to do some professional education or connect with certain people and that sort of thing. But, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm kind of a one day at a time. Take it as it comes. And of course, yeah, I mean, I have some more short-term goals, but I'm also just kind of getting by and still got three kids at home and just enjoying all of that.
Yeah. Well, it feels like you have gone through some reinventions. So you're definitely a mother of reinvention, but they've happened to you sort of like in their own time. Like they've happened to you in the correct time because you've just done the thing that's in front of you. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, no, it's been a blast. It's been quite a ride, that's for sure. But yes, lots of reinvention, that's for sure. And also reinvention within the business, you know, with anyone with a business, you think you're comfortable, you get to a certain place and then you grow and then you have to reinvent. You need to be like, okay, so we need to hire people now who knows something about HR. And then you grow a grant and you're like, okay, now we need more investment or, you know, there's always change, right? And that's why I always say you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah. You're just writing out those little reinventions as they come. I love it. Well, thank you, Julie, so much. Congratulations on the book. I know this is like a really busy period for you with launch and publicity and all that. So we will keep an eye out and see where you are in the world. And we'll link up everything we've got in the show notes for this episode.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Julie. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Mother of Reinvention Show. As a reminder, you can find links to the things we talked about today, including Julie's new book, at motherofreinventionshow.com. And a reminder that I would also love to hear from you. Send me an email at hello@motherofreinventionshow.com to let me know how you feel about the topics and guests, make a suggestion, or just say hi. Again, that's hello@motherofreinventionshow.com. Thanks, and I'll talk to you soon.